This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation, May 17th, 2012. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, was you ever bit by a dead bee? The Poetry Foundation gives out the Emily Dickinson Prize every few years, and it goes to an American poet over the age of 40 who has yet to publish a first book. This year's winner is Haley Lighthouser, who will receive $10,000 and publication by Grey Wolf Press. To talk about Haley Lighthouser and to listen with us to a few of her poems is the senior editor of Grey Wolf Press, Jeffrey Schatz, who joins me from the studios of Minnesota Public Radio in Minneapolis. Hi, Jeff.
Hello, Curtis. A pleasure to be here.
I've read a handful of Haley Lighthouser's poems that have been published in Poetry Magazine in the past few years, yet I know really little else about her. What else can you tell us about Haley Lighthouser and her poetry?
She's an interesting mix of the traditional and the non-traditional. I think she would think of herself as a poetry outlier, which is to say she studied poetry early on, including with John Frederick Nims, who, of course, was an early editor of Poetry Magazine.
Sure.
But she did not go to an MFA program. She has not come through the system of writers' workshops that many poets come through. And I think that comes through in the sort of way that she constructs her poems. I think she would consider herself an autodidact. She wrote early on and then stopped writing for quite some time. In the year 2000, after her mother passed away, she started writing again. And I think that she struggled for quite a while with formal poetry versus free verse. Mm-hmm. And in these last 10 years, she has really made traditional forms and rhyme and meter her own.
Well, let's hear a short one, and I'll let her say the title because it's part of the poem.
Was you ever bit by a dead bee? I was, by its posthumous chomp, by its bad dab of venom, its joy buzzer buzz. If you ever shanked like the chump that I was, by the posthumous chomp of an expired wire, you'll bellow out prompt at the pitiless shiv when she does what she does. Was you? I was. By its posthumous chomp, by its bad dab of venom, its joy buzzer buzz.
Was You Ever Bit by a Dead Bee by Haley Lighthouser was published in the July-August 2009 issue of Poetry Magazine. Now, Jeff, that line, was you ever bit by a dead bee, will be familiar to a lot of listeners. I think it was said by Eddie, played by Walter Brennan in the movie To Have and Have Not.
She told me it's her favorite movie.
It is, okay. It's a great movie. It's tremendous. How do you think the poem itself relates to that movie?
You know, in my reading of it, very little.
Mm-hmm.
I think it really is a point of departure.
Yeah.
And I think that is something that she does throughout this manuscript. It is riddled with these kinds of allusions to film, to other lines of poetry, to song, to all of these odd, some known and some unknown palindromes that she works with, including in this poem we have that bad dab. That sort of allusion making and that play of language and that sort of found quality is something that I think repeats itself in probably not every poem, but pretty close.
One thing, I read this to myself and I read it out loud and was both amused by the sounds and challenged by actually saying some of this stuff. If you say a line like, by its posthumous chomp, that's really hard to say, but it's fun to try.
Was you ever bit by a dead bee? I was, by its posthumous chomp. By its bad dab of venom, its joy buzzer buzz.
There's a real pleasure in the kind of the muscular sensuality of language in this poem.
I think that comes through in her reading, and it comes through in her absolute delight with sound.
Yeah.
That sort of surface grittiness of repetition and sonic echo and refrain and rhyme and meter comes through in such a visceral way. This particular poem is 8 lines.
Mm-hmm.
It has repeated refrains, you know, that posthumous chomp that you mentioned, that joy buzzer buzz, those are lines that get repeated. It's an old French medieval form called the triolet.
Uh-huh.
And it's very, very difficult to do in English for anyone who's attempted it. It's also a form, as many forms can be, where because the first two lines and the last two lines are in fact exactly the same, at least in the traditional triolet form, it's a poem that by its very nature can't go very far.
Right.
So in some ways, what she's done with this, with that knowledge, you know, rather than try to make it a poem about, you know, that brings us through some clear, sustained argument in the way that a Shakespearean sonnet can do, what she does with this is pure exuberance and joy of language.
If you ever shanked like the chump that I was by the posthumous chomp of an expired wire, you'll bellow out prompt at the pitiless shiv when she does what she does. Was you? I was. By its posthumous chomp, by its bad dab of venom, its joy buzzer buzz.
She's going to hate me for exposing this, but she did tell me about this particular poem that the words shank and the words shiv are related words there that she found in an advertisement.
Uh-huh.
And that means little to the poem, but it tells you something about the way that she magpie-like takes language and sort of cobbles so much of this together to make it into something new.
Well, why would she hate you for saying that?
Well, she told me that she didn't want me to say it, and now I have. I'm getting off onto a bad start with our poet, I'm afraid. I think she's in part being funny, but I think that some poets like to where they get their language from can be something that's very private.
Yeah, I've been shocked to learn that some poets actually keep notebooks of interesting words and then work it into a poem somewhere along the line. That's a funny way of writing, but it suggests a sensitivity to the sound and sensuality of language that's very appealing.
Absolutely, and I think the fact that she gets some of this language from contemporary media lends the poem, even in a 500, 600-year-old French form, it allows the language of that form to come alive for us as contemporary readers. So I hope she wouldn't be too upset with us for talking about this.
That was an 8-line poem, but I always feel like we know so much about Haley Lighthizer.
It's your fault, Curtis. You drug it out of me.
Let's go to the next poem. This one is called "Oh," She Says. Very funny title. Is there anything that you would like to say about this, Jeff, before we hear it?
Like the "Was You Ever Bit by a Dead Bee," in this sort of extraordinary formal restraint, even while, you know, the repetition of that "Oh," She Says throughout this, which we're about to hear, creates this wonderful sense of linguistic excess.
Okay, let's hear it. Here's "Oh, She Says" by Haley Lighthizer.
Oh, she says, because she loves to say oh. Oh, to this cloud break that ravels the night. Oh, to this moon, its mouthful of sorrow. Oh, shallow grass and the nettle burr's bite. Oh, to heart's flare, its wobbly satellite. O step after step in stumbling tempo. O owl and oak, O rout of black bat flight. O moaned an attic and Esperanto. O covetous tongue, O fat fandango. O nat tango in the hot ochred light. O windward leaves and subtle inferno. O flexing of sea, O stars bolted tight. O ludicrous swoon, O blind hindsight. O torching of bridges and blood boiled white, O sparrow and arrow and hell below, O, she says, because she loves to say O.
That was O, She Says, and that poem was also published in the July-August 2009 issue of Poetry Magazine. Now, Jeff, the poem seems to eat its cake and to have it, too, in a funny way, because she's making fun of poetry. She's making fun of the ode form of oh this, oh that. But then she seems to be relishing the sounds of her own mocking words as she goes along.
Absolutely, and it's why it's so good.
How do you read the poem?
Exactly that. I think that this is a poem that comes very directly out of poets saying you can't do something in a poem.
Yeah, when people want to parody a poem, they'll say, oh, this and oh, that, oh, the sky and the bird and so on. Yeah, but she's
in some ways, she's having fun with this, but she's also reclaiming something, I think, you know, something that is very traditional. We see that "oh" in Shakespeare. We see that "oh" in Whitman. So I think the fact that O appears at least once in virtually every single line.
Oh, she says, because she loves to say oh. Oh, to this cloud break that ravels the night. Oh, to this moon, its mouthful of sorrow. Oh, shallow grass and the nettle burr's bite.
And certainly where we have that interlocking rhyme, oh, sorrow, tempo, esperanto, fandango, inferno, and then the word oh and below in the last stanza, the kind of extraordinary feat and excess of that particular sound happens also on the end rhyme side of it. So it's this almost Hopkins-like exaggeration of that sound that many, for those of us who have survived workshops and MFA programs, we hear these things. You can really only use O once in a poem.
this would not go over well in an MFA program.
No, I don't. This is not a poem I think that could come out of a workshop, and it's something delightful about the poem. It's also something delightful to me about this particular, the Emily Dickinson First Book Award as an enterprise. The three poets that we have published with the Poetry Foundation, Landis Everson and then Brian Culhane and then next year's the new winner, Haley Lighthouser, they're all poets who have not come through what is now considered the sort of usual channels of making a career as a poet.
That's interesting,
And then, when we get a poem like this one, which I believe is a pantoum, or at least a variation of a pantoum.
Seems to
be,
yeah.
Interlocking ABAB, BABA rhymes, and then like that other poem, like that triolet, we end in the exact same way that we begin.
Oh, ludicrous swoon, oh, blind hindsight, oh, torching of bridges and blood boiled white, oh, sparrow and arrow and hell below. Oh, she says, because she loves to say oh.
There's some striking phrases in here. The very second line, oh, to this cloud break that ravels the night. I'm not even sure what ravels mean, R-A-V-L-E-L-S, but it's a lot of fun to say that. What does ravel mean?
Well, I know what unravel means.
Right.
So I'm assuming it's sort of a back formation of that.
Yeah.
Oh, to this cloud break that instead of taking the night apart, brings it together, the cloud break.
And that makes perfect sense
reveals,
now, yeah.
That reveals the night.
Yeah.
Is how I read that line. You have wonderful lines here. Oh, ludicrous swoon. Oh, blind hindsight. And then, we talked a little bit about the palindrome in that, was you ever bit by a dead bee? Here we have in the second line of the third stanza.
Oh, nat tango in the hot ochred light.
Oh, nat tango. Three words. Oh, and then second word, G-N-A-T, nat, and then third word, tango. Well, of course, that's a brilliant surprising palindrome there.
Yeah.
So you get these little units of unexpected delight throughout here for those who kind of relish that sort of language play.
Jeff, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Jeffrey Schatz, the senior editor of Grey Wolf Press. You can read some more poems by Haley Lighthouser on our website, poetryfoundation.org. Or better yet, you can buy her new book, which comes out, well, you have to wait for it. It comes out in October 2013. Let us know what you think of this program. Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. You can subscribe to this podcast in the iTunes store, where you can also write a review. The theme music for this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.